Introduction to the chapter, I'll read that. Maharaj Priyavrata. This chapter describes how King Priyavrata enjoyed royal opulence and majesty and then returned to full knowledge. King Priyavrata was detached from worldly opulence, and then he became attached to his kingdom, but finally he again became detached from material enjoyment and thus achieved liberation. When King Pariksit heard about this, he was struck with wonder, but he was somewhat bewildered as to how a devotee with no attachment for material enjoyment could later become attached to it. Thus, in astonishment, he questioned Sukadeva Goswami about this. In response to the king's inquiries, Sukadeva Goswami said, "A devotional service being transcendental cannot be deviated by any material influences." Priyavrata had received transcendental knowledge from the instructions of Narada, and therefore he did not want to enter into materialistic life of enjoyment in a kingdom. He accepted the kingdom, however, at the request of such superior demigods as Lord Brahma and Lord Indra, the King of Heaven. So we say duty calls, noblesse oblige, at rank, you're born as a king, king's son. Then you have responsibilities and obligations. Everything is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, and everyone must work accordingly. Just as a bull is controlled by a rope tied to its nose, so all conditioned souls are forced to work under the spells of the modes of nature. A civilized man, therefore, works according to the instruction of Varna and Ashram. Even in materialistic life, however, no one is free to act. Everyone is compelled to accept a certain type of body offered by the Supreme Lord, and thus be allotted different grades of happiness and distress. Therefore, even if one artificially leaves home and goes to the forest, he again becomes attached to materialistic life. Family life is compared to a fortress for practicing sense control. When the senses are controlled, one may live either at home or in the forest. There is no difference. When Maharaj Priyavrata followed the instructions of Lord Brahma, or following the instructions of Lord Brahma, accepted the royal throne, his father, Manu, left home for the forest. Maharaj Priyavrata then married Barishmati, the daughter of Vishwakarma. You can imagine that Vishwakarma is the engineer of the architect of the demigods, and must possibly have been a very nice palace offered as part of her dowry. In the womb of Barishmati, he begot 10 sons named Agnidra, Idman Iva, Yajnabahu, Mahavir, Piranya Reta, Grita Prista, Svavana, Medhatiti, Vitrahotra, and Kavi. He also begot one daughter whose name was Rajasvati. Maharaj Priyavrata lived with his wife and family for many thousands of years. The impressions from the rims of Maharaj Priyavrata's chariot wheels created 7 oceans and 7 islands. Of the 10 sons of Priyavrata, 3 sons, named Kavi, Mahavir, and Savana, accepted sannyas, the 4th order of life. The remaining 7 sons became the rulers of the 7 islands. Maharaj Priyavrata also had a second wife, in whom he begot 3 sons, named Uttama, Vaivata, and Tamasa. All of them were elevated to the post of Manu. Sukadeva Goswami thus described how Maharaj Priyavrata achieved liberation. So this is a very favorable reflection on Maharaj Priyavrata. We see that when a man or woman has a successful child, the esteem in which the parents are held increases. And someone should write a book titled Raising Children for Fun, Adoration, or for Profit, Adoration, and Distinction. So, here's the text. Raja Avacha. Priyavrato, Bhagavata, Atmarama, Katam, Mune, Grihe, Ramata, Janmula, Karma, Panda, Parabhava, Raja Uvacha, Priyavrato Bhagavata, Atmarama Katam Mune, Grihe Ramata Yanmula, Ramabanda Parabhava, Raja Uvacha, Priyavrato Bhagavata, Grihe Ramata Yanmula, Karma Banda Prabhama. Rajo Vacha, Priyavrato Bhagavata, Atmarama Katamune, Grihe Ramata Yanmula, Karma Banda.
Another devotee here wanted to sing the verse. Please do.
Raja Vacha Priyavato Bhagavata Atmarama Katamune Rihe Ramata Yanmula Karma Banda
Raja Vacha, King Pariksit said, Priyavrata, King Priyavrata, Bhagavata, the great devotee, Atma Arama, who takes pleasure in self-realization. Katam, why? Mune, O great sage, Grihe, at home. Atma Ramata, enjoy. I'm sorry, Aramata, enjoy. Yatmula, having which as the root cause. Karma Bandha, the bondage of fruitive activities. Parabhava, the defeat of one's human mission. Translation, King Parikshit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, O great sage, why did King Priyavrata, who was a great self-realized devotee of the Lord, remain in householder life, which is the root cause of the bondage of karma, fruitive activities, and which defeats the mission of human life? Repeating the verse, King Parikshit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, O great sage, why did King Priyavrata, who was a great self-realized devotee of the Lord, remain in householder life, which is the root cause of bondage, of karma, fruitive activities, and which defeats the mission of human life? Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In the fourth canto, Srila Sukadeva Goswami explains that Narada Muni perfectly instructed King Priyavrata about the mission of human life. The mission of human life is to realize oneself and then gradually go back home, back to Godhead. Since Narada Muni instructed the king fully on this subject, why did he again enter householder life, which is the main cause of material bondage? So this is the big question. Maharaj Parikshit was greatly astonished that King Priyavrata remained in household life, especially since he was not only a self-realized soul, but also a first-class devotee of the Lord. The devotee actually has no attraction for householder life. But surprisingly, King Priyavrata enjoyed household life very much. One may argue, why is it wrong to enjoy household life? The reply is that in household life, one becomes bound by the results of fruitive activities. The essence of household life is sense enjoyment, and as long as one engrosses his mind in working hard for sense enjoyment, one becomes bound by the reactions of fruitive activities. This ignorance of self-realization is the greatest defeat in human life. The human form of life is especially meant for getting out of the bondage of fruitive activities. But as long as one is forgetful of his life's mission and acts like an ordinary animal, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, he must continue his conditioned life of material existence. Such a life is called Swarup Vishmriti, forgetfulness of one's constitutional position. Therefore, in Vedic civilization, one is trained in the very beginning of life as a brahmachari. The brahmachari must execute austerities and refrain from sex indulgence. Therefore, if one is completely trained in the principles of brahmacharya, he generally does not enter household life. He is then called a Naistika Brahmachari, which indicates total celibacy. King Parikshit was thus astonished that the great King Priyavrata, although trained in the principles of Naistika Brahmacharya, entered household life. The words Bhagavata Atmarama, are very significant in this verse. If one is self-satisfied, as is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is called Bhagavata Atmarama. There are different types of satisfaction. Karmis are satisfied in their fruitive activities. Jnanis are satisfied to merge into the effulgence of Brahman. And the devotees are satisfied to engage in the Lord's service. The Lord is self-satisfied because he is fully opulent, and one who is satisfied by serving him is called Bhagavata Atmarama. Manushanam Sahareshu, Bhagavad Gita 7.3, out of many thousands of persons, one may endeavor for liberation, and of many thousands of persons attempting to become liberated, one may achieve liberation from the anxieties of material existence and become self-satisfied. Even that satisfaction, however, is not the ultimate satisfaction. The jnanis and the karmis have desires, as do the yogis, but devotees have no desires. Satisfaction in the service of the Lord is called akarma, akama, freedom from desire. And this is the ultimate satisfaction. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit inquired, how could one who is fully satisfied on the highest platform be satisfied with family life? The word parabhava in this verse is also significant. When one is satisfied in family life, he is doomed, because he must already have forgotten his relationship with the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj describes how the activities of family life implicate one more and more. Atma patam griham andha kupam. Household life is like a dark well. If one falls into this well, his spiritual death is assured. If you're a grihastha, this makes you want to fall on the floor and beat your hands and their fists, you know. Anyway, back to the purport. How Priyavrata Maharaj remained a liberated paramahamsa even within family life is described in the next verse. They have to wait till tomorrow to find out. Anyway, I decided to take the purport, read sections of it again, most of it. I don't know if we'll have time. And then inject my own, conjectures, speculations, or remembrances of what Srila Prabhupada spoke at different times. Because this is a very touchy matter, and people need to have some explanation sometimes. So I've attempted to explain. In the fourth canto, Srila Sukadeva Goswami explains that Narada Muni perfectly instructed King Priyavrata about the mission of human life. The mission of human life is to realize oneself and then gradually go back to home, back to Godhead. So this is what Srila Prabhupada taught us. Realize you are not that body. You are spirit soul. This is the first step in self-realization. It's not the ultimate step. It's not the final step. Then we serve and we purify, or serve and purify yourself, gradually go back to Godhead. So the indication is that self-realized soul is not necessarily a pure devotee yet, not ready to return to Krishna. I may say, I'm Krishna's servant, I may say I'm not this body, but I'm actually purified to the extent where I'm acting completely 100% on that level. I may say, but we remain still inclined to sense gratification, subtle or gross. So it is this mentality, this pseudo-realized state of Krishna consciousness that we gradually need to work our way out of, work beyond this pseudo-state and its pretensions to be on the level of prema-bhakti. This is a very important aspect of our Krishna consciousness at this particular time, because we see growing up in different splinters and schisms apart from our movement, and even within the ISKCON group, there's a tendency towards this sahajism, to take things cheaply, to consider oneself more elevated than one actually is. And this is an offense, and it leads to fall down, without any question. So how do we do away with our pretensions? How do we do away with our inclination to take things cheaply? By chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Year after year, decade after decade, life after life, if it's necessary. Whatever it takes, we should be ready to pay that price. A real devotee, even a neophyte, chants Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And the more advanced one becomes, the more he wants to chant this holy name. A pseudo-realized devotee can't chant. Prabhupada was very amused. There was a cartoon in one magazine in New York, where chanting was so popular and was so all-encompassing. There was a picture of this old man and an old woman, and the woman is saying, chant, 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 and the man is saying, can't. The Prabhupada thought that was very amusing. There's another funny cartoon, actually, where this guy, he's in the phone booth, he's a devotee, as you can see, he's shaved up, he's got a little sikha, and he says, Mabel? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. I think I forgot my wallet on the dresser. Can you check? So that's what householder life is meant to be like. You're never forgetting Krishna. Krishna is the most important thing before you, wherever you left your wallet. In one pseudo-realized state, a professed but unrealized knowledge, the professed pseudo-devotion leads to sahaja mentality. So in discussions recently with some of my friends, devotee friends, I've realized that the tendency there is so amazing, the tendency towards taking things cheaply and considering oneself in an advanced state is so amazing. It's one of, as Maya becomes more subtle for us, we do away with our gross anarthas to a certain extent, as it becomes more subtle and we start to live in our mind more, we're more concerned with what's going on in our mind than we are with what's concerned with what's going on with our bodies, then the tendency to deviate is still there. And Maya is very, very tricky. So such persons see Krishna's enjoying with the gopis as a lesson in how to enjoy with ordinary women in this material world. Now, this is a very, very dangerous thing. Without pursuing the gradual process of elevation by devotional service, they devolve into cheap imitators. This cheap imitation can take place publicly, if one is very far gone, or privately in a group, such as a family scene, or even solitarily in the mind of a deviant from the correct path of austerity of mind. So who defines the correct path of austerity of mind? Only the bona fide guru coming in disciplic succession in accord with Shastra can define it. Guru, sadhus, and Shastra. Scriptures provide the road marks on the pure, on the sure path back to Godhead. So this is a very important thing. I remember Dvaita Acharya's class. He was talking about these things. I always had thought of them as a triangle, you know, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. But he's saying actually Shastra is the topmost, and below that is the Sadhus, and then the Guru. And the Guru takes the neophyte and introduces him to these things. But the guru has to preach in such a way that he's in accord with the shastra and with the sadhus and the shastra. So this is the check and balance that we have in our very assured system, our very perfect system of Krishna consciousness that Prabhupada has given us. Back to the purport. Since Narada Muni instructed the king fully on this subject, why did he again enter into household life, which is the main cause of material bondage? This is the big question. Maharaj Pariksit was greatly astonished that King Priyavrata remained in household life, especially since he was not only a self-realized soul, but also a first-class devotee of the Lord. A devotee actually has no attraction for household life, but surprisingly, King Priyavrata enjoyed household life very much. One may argue, what is wrong with householder life? The reply is that household life, one becomes bound by the results of his fruitive activities. So the question is, what are the fruitive activities? What are fruitive activities? What does that mean, fruitive? They are actions that bind us to the material world. Karma, good or bad karma, it binds us. It keeps us here in the material world, locked in. Now how does it do that? Because it's a reflection, or that those ropes are basically our desire. What is our desire? This is where karma becomes so effective, because we desire the fruit. We desire the fruit of our good activities, of our sacrifices, and we don't desire the bad karma. So we try to offset that by performing sacrifices and penances. So how do they bind? They bind by our own attachment, by our desire to enjoy the results of our fruitive actions. So it's our attachment that we have to work on, our attachment to the material world, our attachment to sense pleasure. This is what we're trying to destroy by this chanting of Hare Krishna. We remember Srila Prabhupada said that there's another one coming on later about that. Srila Prabhupada said that two men can perform the same work side by side, but one is karmically bound by the work, and one is liberated and purified by the work. So taking that to mean that you can go into household life even in such a situation. And if your mentality is, I'm doing this for Krishna, I need to produce sons to carry on Krishna consciousness, to affect the order of the universe. If that is the mentality, one of service, then those things are allowable. Okay. The mentality of the worker is what is important. It all comes back to us, to our desire. Our progress in Krishna consciousness is not dependent on our guru, or the association of devotees, or the translation of the Shastra into our native language. It's dependent primarily on our desire to return to Krishna. This is the primary concern a devotee should have. What is my desire? Not how much Shastra have I memorized, not how much seva have I given to my guru, not how much, not how much homage and respect I've paid to the sadhus, but what is my desire? And this is a thing that one has to look into the core of his heart. I was trained in the Catholic religion. I was brought up as a Catholic. And they have an activity called confession. So when you make the confession, you have to examine your conscience. You have to look into your mind and say, what am I doing? You know, what have I done wrong? And this is very, very helpful because it presents us with our faults. Otherwise, if we don't present ourselves with our faults, if no one ever chastises, or we never chastise ourselves, we don't know what's right and what's wrong. You become what's called a sociopath. Whatever I want, that's okay. Whatever I want to do, that's okay. But that's not reality, though, is it? Because there's reactions for whatever we do. I used to preach in the prison, and I met one young boy, and he was really kind of hopeless, but he had some inclination towards Krishna. But he was constantly in jail. Something, I think some mentality was not correct in his mind. And when he would go into society outside of jail, his offenses were kind of small. He wasn't really in prison, he was just in jail. He would take intoxication and he would lose all track of what was proper, what was right. So he would steal from his friends and people who were giving him shelter and so forth. Kind of heinous activity. So he talked with a psychologist there, and the psychologist said, you're a sociopath. The sociopath doesn't know what is right or wrong. Everything is based on what is what's good for me. There was a devotee here, I don't remember his name, but he was from Denmark. He was giving a very nice class about how all the leaders of the world are sociopaths. Whatever's right for them, that's what they want. They're not really concerned with the people and under their control. That's why they set such bad examples of starting these wars and fighting over things, commodities and so on. At any rate, those people themselves are controlled by demons. So, anyway, our progress in Krishna consciousness is not dependent on these things. All these things help us to renounce the material world. But unless there's a strong desire, we cannot be saved. The example Prabhupada gives is there's a man drowning, calling for help. Someone throws him a rope, but he does not take it. Help, help, but in such a confused state, he doesn't know what will help. He wants to do something, he wants us to do something, but his rescue depends on his desire, his focus, to help himself. All he has to do is grab the rope. But if we don't take advantage of these different things, due to our limitation internally, our desire internally to take advantage of these things, if that's what's stopping us, then all of these things surrounding ourselves with pure devotees and good association and reading shastra, they're not going to help us. So when you sit down to read, or when you sit down to a class, you have to ask, let me have the desire to understand what is going on here. let me have a desire that this becomes, that I break my routine, my rut, as they say. When you get into a rut, I'm just performing, I'm just acting, it's time to do this, so I do it. But I really, my mind is actually somewhere else. Your mind may not even be focused on a particular type of sense gratification, but you're thinking, maybe there's something better than this. Maybe there's something better for me to enjoy. It's a very deep, a deep and subtle anartha that we have in our hearts that is preventing us from fully surrendering to Krishna, from fully taking advantage of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra and the association devotees. It's a deep anartha. So that's what we have to focus on, cleansing. And the cleansing for that is this chanting. It's chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. That will get rid of our ignorance, that will get rid of our confusion. This ignorance of self-realization is the greatest defeat in human life. The human form of life is especially meant for getting out of the bondage of fruitive activities. So this is about becoming, getting out of that bondage is about becoming desireless. Note that Prabhupada doesn't say the life mission is for getting out of the material world. He says the life mission is for getting out of the bondage of fruitive activities. So what are those fruitive activities are all there in the core desire seeds of the mind and the heart. Those fruitive activities are all coming from a desire. Everything we do comes from a desire to do it. We don't do anything without desiring to do it. As long as one is forgetful of life's mission and acts like an ordinary animal, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, he must continue his conditioned life of material existence. But we say, oh, we're grihasthas, we do these things. Or we're brahmacharis, we do most of these things, but we only think about avoiding one of these things. It is not that these things are bad, sinful, in and of themselves. It is that if they are done with a selfish, nasty, me-first, fruitive mentality, rather than a devotional mentality, they become great obstacles on the path to Godhead, back to Godhead. Let me read that again, I'm sorry. It is not that these things are bad, sinful in and of themselves. It is that if they are done with a selfish, nasty, me-first, sociopathic mentality, fruitive mentality, rather than a devotional mentality, they become great obstacles on the path back to Godhead. So such a life is called swarupa vishmriti. Swarupa vishmriti, forgetfulness of one's real constitutional position. What is that constitutional position? Brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas? No, it is not. Sudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, or Brahman. Then what? What can be done? What is it? It's das. Anudas, anudas. That's our constitutional position. We were talking recently about the idea of rasa. Gita Nairi was saying the only rasa we should be concerned about is I'm sorry I've offended you, Krishna. I'm sorry I've left you. I'm sorry. It's the only real practical rasa we should be concerned with while we're in these bodies. Please help me. I'm sorry. Anytime we start to pretend, oh, I'm a gopi, I'm a cow, anytime we start to, it's sahajism. It's putting ourselves on a platform that we do not deserve as long as we're in this body. And Prabhupada so clearly demonstrated that by his life. You know, he never even let on, you know, what is his desire. Some devotees conject that he is a manjari. Recently there was a paper put out by one former ISKCON devotee all about how Prabhupada was a manjari. And then other conjecture is there that Prabhupada established his first temple in India in Vrindavan, in New Raman Reti, so he was a coward boy. And Prabhupada supposedly said one time that, I don't know what my rasa is, but this coward boy is nice. But anyway, we cannot speculate. And it's not what he did by his attitude was it is not important. It is not something that we should concern ourselves with at this stage of our Krishna consciousness development. While we have these bodies, we are going to be inclined to be in the bodily conception of life. And we cannot divorce ourselves from that bodily conception of life by thinking ourselves spiritually or thinking of our spiritual identity. It's not practical. There are certain standards, there are certain ideals that one takes, a Siddha Pranali, a guru, and so forth. But that is not our ISKCON line. We don't do that in ISKCON. It's not important for us. What is important for us is that I am Das Anu Das Anu Das. I'm servant of the servant of the servant. This is what Prabhupada's final instructions were. Please, if you love me, if you want to show your love for me, please cooperate together. So that can only be done if one has a humble attitude towards everyone in his association, everyone in his experience. And that goes for family members too. Therefore, in Vedic civilization, one is trained at the very beginning of life as a brahmacharya. Brahmacharya must execute austerities and refrain from sex indulgence. Therefore, if one is completely trained in the principles of brahmacharya, he generally does not enter household life. Now remember, what's wrong with household life? It's not the physical sex. It's not the fruit of mentality. It is the fruit of mentality. The subtle sex life, of course, I did this this morning, this particular section. Subtle sex life, of course, one leads to the other. So if you're thinking of sex subtly or you're having it grossly, you know, they both lead to the fruit of mentality. And that's why brahmacharis are asked to avoid it. And householders are asked to avoid it also, except with the license of marriage and the use of it for the proper... for progeneration. So I have a little poem here, but I want to read it. So anyway, I better read it. Okay. So people are thinking like this: I'll get a wife, a providing husband, we'll have fun, we'll get a nice son to take care of us in our old age. Me, 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 I take the fruits. You renunciates can have the roots. So what is the confusion between sex and fruit? Fruitive. Fruitive starts with sex desire. We come here into the material world to enjoy, to the fruitive world, to enjoy sex. But it's complicated. We have to make a show of opulences to attract a sex partner. Then it goes mad. Crazy. It's never right. Things are never right. You can never fully satisfy, because we're not perfect beings. When we're separated from Krishna, we're not perfect. So we can't satisfy other people. There's a cartoon that came to mind recently, like two birds are looking at this nest. And the female bird, apparently she's a female bird, there's very little way of understanding which bird is which gender. But she says, "This isn't the look I had in mind." They're looking at a nest, right? But it's not the look I had in mind. And so, you know the look, that, you know, that special, unique nest look that properly bespeaks of her as one kind of trademark persona, you know, how one decorates his house and shows the kind of things he's interested in and so forth. So only she can create that special look, but this isn't the look. She's never satisfied. So this is madness. After the perfection that cannot be had here, we're after that perfection to make the perfect place, perfect ideal situation. It cannot be had here. Because devotees are sometimes considered materially lazy or materially oblivious, you might say, in terms of the way they live. And the result is, the reason is, that they just couldn't care less. Their head is in some different place, because they don't have the obligation to try to create perfection on the material platform. However, for Krishna, we try to make things very, very nice. That's our objective. So even in our homes, we try to make them nice. In our little brahmachari rooms, we try to make them neat and clean. But we're not so much concerned with the look, you know, the imaginary perfection that some people think they can change, that they can achieve. He's then called an Astika Brahmacharya, which indicates total celibacy. What is the reward of Brahmacharya? What's the reward of Brahmacharya? Total relief from the need to pursue fruitive activities under the direction of a ladybird. So we get that freedom as a brahmachari, or even as a householder in a renounced life, a strictly following householder, we get that relief from the need to pursue fruitive activities, to make everything nice and right and perfect. And that is a great relief. And now my skating on thin ice really begins. This is what is meant by the controversial statement that a woman's lust is 10 times stronger than a man's lust. It means that her lust is spread to all that she does. She wants everything. But because lust cannot be satisfied by trying to describe or satisfy it, she becomes very, very frustrated. So women are generally not happy with things as they are. She's not 10 times as sexually agitated for gross sex life as a man. That would be impossible. It would be horrific show. But on the material level, she wants 10 times more than it takes to satisfy a man. Is that right? Does that make sense? Is that right? Does that make sense? Is that right? Does that make sense? It does, doesn't it? What Prabhupada uses the thing, 20 mustaches can fit where 4 breasts cannot. So women have to have a special situation, and that's what householder life is about. It's fruitive. You have to create a special situation. So back to the purport. King Parikshit was thus astonished by the great King Priyavrata, although trained in the principles of Naistika Brahmacharya, that he entered householder life. The words Bhagavata Atmaramaha, Bhagavata Atmaramaha, are very significant in this verse. If one is self-satisfied, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is, he is called a Bhagavata Atmarama. There are different types of satisfaction. Karmis are satisfied by their fruitive desires or fruitive activities. Jnanis want to merge into the effulgence of the Ruan, and devotees are satisfied to engage in the Lord's service. So repeat. All right, we won't repeat. The Lord is self-satisfied because he's fully opulent. He is fully opulent. And one who is satisfied by serving him is called a Bhagavata Atmarama. So if you want to be satisfied, self-satisfied, you have to serve Krishna. That's the key. That's the only way you're going to become self-satisfied. And how do we serve Krishna? Das under das under das. We become a servant of the devotees. We become a servant of our spiritual master. We become a servant of whoever you consider senior, or and even those persons you consider inferior, you're their servant. Not such a good thing to consider oneself superior to anyone, but it happens. So this means satisfied by Bhagavat, the Lord, not just myself, not self-satisfied by this self, by this little spirit soul. Not satisfied by my own tiny self, but by Bhagavat, the Supreme Self, satisfied by the Personality of Godhead. Maheshanam Saheshrishu, out of many thousands of persons. So this is the good part. Now Prabhupada says, even that satisfaction, however, is not the ultimate satisfaction. The jnanis and the karmis have desires, as do the yogis, but devotees have no desires. This is from the purport. Even that satisfaction, however, is not the ultimate satisfaction, the self-realized soul, satisfaction being self-realized. The devotees have no desires. He's talking about pure devotees here, not about me. He means you all, all of you. Satisfaction in the service of the Lord is called akarma, freedom from desire. And this is the ultimate satisfaction. So can we desire to become desireless? Is this allowed? But akarma means without material desires. Devotees desire the service of Krishna. That seva desire is not a non-material desire. therefore his profession, of desirelessness. We don't aspire to that Zen so-called desireless pseudo-state of unconsciousness. Therefore, back to the purport, therefore Maharishi Pariksit inquired, how could one who was fully satisfied on the highest platform be satisfied with family life? So that's back to the mystery of family life, the mystery and its attraction. The word parabhava in this verse is also significant. When one is satisfied in family life, he is doomed because he must already have forgotten his relationship with the Lord. So a devotee's situation is he's never satisfied. He's never satisfied with his relationships, with other people, with his family, with his friends. He's never satisfied. There's something more I should be doing. A devotee has this bug in his mind that I'm not doing enough, that I'm not fulfilling enough the order of my spiritual master. And so this bug is what keeps him actually excited about Krishna consciousness. Never gets to that platform where I've done enough, now I'm retiring, this is it for me. Never gets to that platform. So Prahlad Maharaj describes how the activities of family life implicate one more and more. Patatma patam griham anta kupam. Householder life is like a dark well. If one falls into this well, his spiritual death is assured. If you're a grihasta, yes, you're going to fall down and cry. Anyway. How Maharaj Parivata remained Paramahamsa, even within his family life, is described in the next verse. So that's all. I won't go any further. Tomorrow you'll find out, tune in and find out how he resolved. The quagmire of family life, as we know it, as the sages see it, and as the Shastra authorizes it. So any questions or comments? We have just 5 minutes. Yes. Is there a microphone? No microphone. Well, it's like an artist. An artist is never really satisfied with his work. Picasso used to do 10 drawings. At his end of his life, he started drawing very quickly, very fast, his paintings. He would do 10, and every day he would destroy 9. He would choose what he thought was the best one. So we become, if we get out of our rut of devotional service, thinking I'm doing so nicely and I'm doing a great job and why is he finding fault with me, and so if we get out of that rut, we get into the mentality of pushing. Prabhupada was always in that mentality of pushing, do more, double it. You know, devotees were very satisfied. They had pleased Prabhupada with a huge amount of books distributed in 1 year. And his reply was double it. And all of the devotees who had the big authority, who were taking so much credit on themselves, were shocked. But they accepted Prabhupada's pronouncement. So a devotee should be like that. He should always be considering, how can I do more? How can I do more? Somehow I have to push myself. Even in a debilitated state, I have to push myself to think more of Krishna, do more for Krishna, serve the devotees better. And this mentality, it leads to success. As soon as one is satisfied with whatever income he has, or whatever educational level he has, or whatever spiritual status he has, when satisfied with that, then he stops. So these plateaus that as we're climbing, sometimes we get on these plateaus, like the idea of the mountain climber, he gets to a certain place as a rest stop. There's a shelter, a cabin, there's a fire going on, it's cold outside. He can go in there, but if he wants to reach the top, he has to continue with the struggle. So if you're not struggling, what do they say? If no pain, no gain. If you're not actually feeling some challenge in your devotional life, and that challenge should come from within. You know, it's not that you have to measure up to everybody else's challenge or what everyone else says you must do. You know, it has to come from within what you want to do. Right. Yes, Prabhu.
In the course of the lecture, you mentioned that our spiritual progress does not depend on the mercy of the Guru.
You have to talk very, very slowly.
You said our spiritual progress does not depend on the mercy of the Guru or the sadhus.
Yeah.
But our desire. But we are also told that without the mercy of the Guru, we can't make advancement in devotional service.
That's true.
So it's not a bit complicated.
It's a little complicated, but you have to understand, just like we see some devotees in ISKCON, they've had three gurus. Their gurus fell down. Two of the gurus fell down. But they still continue to try to elevate themselves. They took shelter of another guru because they understood that was the process. So that's part of the process. But your advancement still is not depending on what that guru does. So many Prabhupada disciples, they saw, you know, they fell away. And Prabhupada was a pure devotee, he was empowered to preach all over the world, but for them, it didn't gel, it didn't reach. The mercy didn't reach them. Why? Why didn't that mercy? Because of their desire. The rope was thrown, but the confusion, the misunderstanding, just grab the rope, just grab the rope. Help, I'm drowning, help. But there's no comprehension of how to take shelter. And why is that confusion there? Because of desire. The desire for fruitive activities, the desire to enjoy. I have this other agenda here. You know, I'd rather do this than go back to Godhead. And that's our situation. So these things are absolutely important. Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra are absolutely important. I don't mean to minimize them. But I'm saying the thing that holds us back from taking advantage of those things is our personal desire. And until we investigate, where am I at? You know, I know what his problem is. I know what his problem is. I know all these problems. These other people have problems. But what is my problem? You know, until you go inside of yourself, you're not going to find a solution to all of these problems. You know? If I have a problem with someone, it's generally because I don't want to tolerate that person. The way that that person's coming on to me, what that person's telling me, etc., etc. But it's my problem. You can't say, well, he did this to me, therefore I went out and I beat somebody to pieces. You can't say that. You know, it's not a defense. All right? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. From the upper planetary system down to the lower planetary system, there is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending.
Yeah.
Does that happen in the spiritual world?
Yeah, it's also there in the spiritual world. They're taking prasadam. Yeah. I don't know about the sex life in the spiritual world. I know Radha Krishna have a very elevated, intimate arrangement, you know. But that's not something I concern myself with so much. You know, other devotees can read those descriptions and so forth. I can't. I don't want to read those. I'm not privy to that. And so I just know that I have so much to do on a much lower level. But to go into a higher level and try to enjoy there, you know, try to please myself by knowing about these things, it would not work for me. So on a much lower level, I'm safe. Those things are going on, obviously, but Prabhupada said sex is the lowest pleasure in the spiritual world, and here's the highest pleasure. So, it's there, but no one's very much concerned about it. If that's your, if your desire is sex life, Brahmaloka, yeah, Indraloka. You can enjoy for thousands and thousands of years, come back here, do a little work. It's like those devotees that come to Mayapur and they go back to the West to work and they come back to Mayapur. It's a little like that, you know. It's unfortunate, but it depends on your desire. What do you want? Do you become desireless? You just want Krishna's service? Or do you try to work something out for yourself where you can manage your desires? That's what householder life is proper management of desires. But the ultimate goal is to give up this attachment, this fruitive attachment. I don't want to keep people from the darshans. Hare Krishna. Dhanyavad. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhagavatam ki jai. I'm sorry that sometimes I get a little confused in my presentation because I have to type all this out. Otherwise, I can't keep a... keep a train of thought. Keep a old age.